Admiral Lucian was now well aware that the British fleet would do everything possible to concentrate their forces against him. With the danger of running short of oil, his ship flooding, and with a slight list to port, he decided to make a run for the nearest port for repairs, Saint-Nazaire, in the Bay of Biscay. The loss of Hood came as a great shock to Admiral Tovey, as indeed to the whole nation. Hood had seemed to the British people invincible. The Admiralty responded with all the power of their command. Bismarck had to be found and destroyed. Then came the first bit of good news out of all the bad. A lone Sunderland flying boat out over the Atlantic spotted the German ship and reported that she was leaving a long trail of oil. Tovey reasoned that if Bismarck was thus damaged, then her raiding capability would be terminated, and that she would make for the nearest port for repairs, which had to be Saint-Nazaire. With the forces at his disposal, he would have to try to cut off all escape routes in that direction. This, however, was easier said than done, for the Atlantic is a very large ocean, comprising some 9 million square miles of sea, in which to find one ship. Lucian now found himself at a great disadvantage, for Tovey was about to use the advantage of his aircraft carriers, and Lucian had no experience against the naval air arm. And so Tovey gathered all the forces he could muster to deal with this monster. It would be as well at this point to pause and remind ourselves once again of these ships and where they were. Following Bismarck and Prince Eugen were the two cruisers Suffolk and Norfolk and the damaged Prince of Wales. Tovey's own force comprised his battleship King George V, the aircraft carrier Victorious, the battleship Repulse with 5 cruisers and 6 destroyers. From Gibraltar, the battlecruiser Renown, the aircraft carrier Ark Royal, the cruiser Sheffield, and 6 destroyers. From Halifax, Nova Scotia, the battleship Revenge, the battleship Ramillies 400 miles to the south, and steaming along the coast of Spain to intercept Bismarck heading for Saint-Nazaire, the cruiser Edinburgh. Also in mid-Atlantic was the 9 16-inch gun battleship Rodney. Tovey realized only too well that once Bismarck got to the French coast, she would be under the protection of German bomber support. The total force now trying to intercept Bismarck was 8 battleships and battlecruisers, 2 aircraft carriers, 11 cruisers, and 21 destroyers. Somehow, Tovey had to find a way to slow the Bismarck's flight to France, and the only way possible was an airstrike. At 2200 that evening, the 24th of May, 9 torpedo-carrying Swordfish planes from Victorious set off to find the enemy. At 22:30, guided by Norfolk's radar, the Swordfish found Bismarck and attacked, but the enemy ship managed to avoid all torpedoes except one, which did no damage. Now Tovey received further bad news, for Norfolk and Suffolk lost radar contact with the German. On the radar screen, Bismarck had simply disappeared. This sometimes happened with freak weather conditions. Tovey decided that by the first light of dawn, he would launch another airstrike search and possibly attack. Unwittingly, Lucian now betrayed his position. He was not to know that the British cruisers had lost radar contact, and convinced that the trailing British cruisers knew his every move with their radar, he broke wireless silence and sent off constant messages to Hitler, giving details of his great victory over Hood and Prince of Wales. These messages were easily picked up by Admiralty Intelligence in London, and her position quickly plotted. But yet again, bad luck or utter negligence struck. Through a careless misunderstanding between Admiralty, Tovey's destroyer direction finder, and King George V's navigational charting, it gave Bismarck's position some 200 miles north of her true position. It now appeared that Bismarck was heading back north towards the Denmark Strait and home. So, at 10:47 on the 25th, based on this latest information, Tovey reversed his course and ordered all ships to head north. This was going away from Bismarck. All this time, of course, Bismarck was getting nearer and nearer the French coast. 7.5 hours later, the terrible navigational error was discovered and the last true position given. Despondent and totally convinced that Bismarck might well escape, Tovey swung his ships around at 18:10 that evening and headed for France. But he was now 150 miles behind the German. Even the weather favoured the enemy with low cloud, heavy seas and poor visibility. However, all was not lost. On the morning of the 26th, a Catalina flying boat spotted Bismarck and was nearly shot down by her anti-aircraft fire. Bismarck had been found, but by now she was only 700 miles from the French coast and at her present speed could arrive the following evening. Now, things went wrong again for the British. For the carrier Victorious and the battleship Prince of Wales and the cruisers Suffolk and Norfolk were so low on oil they had to return to refuel. The only hope that Tovey now had was to launch a torpedo attack from the planes off the carrier Ark Royal coming up from the south, accompanied by Sheffield and Renown. At 13:15 that day, the cruiser Sheffield was detached to race on to try to get a sighting of the enemy ship, and at 14:50, 14 Swordfish from Ark Royal took off, and soon their radar picked up a ship ahead in the mist and murk, and they roared down to attack. Having released their torpedoes, they then found to their dismay that the ship they were attacking was the Sheffield. The results were almost disastrous. Fortunately, the commanding officer of Sheffield increased his ship to full speed, took violent evasive action, and managed to avoid being hit. All the torpedoes either missed or exploded harmlessly on hitting the water due to oversensitive magnetic detonators, and a terrible tragedy was averted. By now, Tovey was in a state of utter despondency, for everything seemed to be going wrong. In the meantime, however, racing in from the west was the 4th Destroyer Flotilla under the command of Captain Vian, with the destroyers Cossack, Maori, Sikh and Zulu, and the Polish Pioran, who had orders from the Commander-in-Chief to join him to form a screen around Tovey's flagship. But Vian was his own man, and despite the penalty that might be involved, he decided to ignore the order and make straight for Bismarck himself. He therefore increased to full speed and made for a possible interception point. It now all depended on two factors: a successful second strike by Ark Royal's aircraft and or a chance torpedo hit by Vian's destroyers. On Ark Royal, frantic preparations were made for the second attack. Detonators had to be changed, and this took time. At 19:15 that evening, in low cloud and poor visibility, 15 Swordfish took off from the carrier, and 45 minutes later, they found Sheffield, which reported that Bismarck was only 12 miles ahead and gave them the bearing. At 20:40, the planes found the Bismarck and set about the attack. Despite the massive, intense and accurate gunfire, the Swordfish rammed home their attack for half an hour.
Fire!
Only two torpedoes hit the Bismarck, one exploding harmlessly against her heavily armored side, but the other hit the great ship in the stern, exploding in the steering compartment, which firmly jammed the rudder hard over. Her Achilles heel had been found. As the Swordfish sped away, Bismarck was seen to circle twice and then crawl away northeast, heading straight for the approaching ships of Tubby's fleet. Aboard Bismarck, morale sank to its lowest depths, for they now knew that they could not hope to escape. Every effort was made to try to repair the damaged rudder, but it was hopeless. Tubby's battleship, although desperately low on oil, could now afford to take its time, and he ordered all ships to converge on the doomed German. Just after midnight of the 26th, congratulations for the sinking of the Hood poured into the ship from Germany, including a special message from Hitler to Admiral Lütjens. It was his birthday. It said, "To the crew of the battleship Bismarck, the whole of Germany is with you. What can be done will be done. Signed, Adolf Hitler." During that night, Captain Vian, racing in from the west with his destroyer flotilla, arrived and circled the Bismarck, and all through that night attacked with torpedoes, firing star shells to illuminate the target. All through those hours, the guns of both sides blazed at one another, with Bismarck unable to do anything except go round in circles. Apart from anything else, Bismarck's guns crews were becoming more and more exhausted, firing their guns continually all through the night for some 8 hours. And this had been part of Vian's strategy, to keep the Bismarck's guns firing to exhaust their crews at their post, so that by the following morning, when Tubby's battle squadron arrived, the efficiency of Bismarck's firing would be impaired. At the first light of dawn on the 27th, the Avengers appeared over the horizon, the two big British battleships, guns pointing, shells in the breaches. A terrible retribution for the destruction of Hood and the loss of 1,500 British sailors was to be unfolded. Neither Tubby in the battleship King George V, nor Captain Hamilton in the battleship Rodney, nor the captains of the accompanying cruisers and destroyers could have had any remorse or conscience for the act they were about to commit. They could not forget the Hood. At 0845 that morning, King George V and Rodney opened fire on the Bismarck at a range of only 9 miles. So tired were the guns crews of the German, they couldn't maintain any accuracy of gunfire. And at 0900, an avalanche of 14-inch shells from King George V and 16-inch from Rodney fell on the German battleship. It was a holocaust of destruction. The first salvos hit the bridge, and one of the first to die was Admiral Lütjen. Then shells reduced the rest of the superstructure to a shambles of glowing hot metal. The next to be wiped out were the massive gun turrets. In every part of the ship, the will to live battled with the fear of death. Men died in their hundreds. Gradually, the two British capital ships closed the range to a mere 5 miles, justly described as point blank. Every shell was on target, reducing the Bismarck to a flaming hull. But still Bismarck would not sink. Then, at only 2 miles, Rodney moved in closer and fired her last two torpedoes. It was history, for it was the first time and the last time that a battleship ever torpedoed another battleship. But still Bismarck floated. King George V and Rodney were now so short of oil after their long chase that they had to leave the blazing hulk and head for home. The cruiser Dorsetshire now moved in and fired three more torpedoes. At that same moment, it is believed that the German crew set charges and scuttled the ship. Very slowly, the mighty Bismarck rolled over and sank with her flag still flying. The British ships remaining did all they could to rescue what remained of the German crew in the water. But with the approach of German submarines waiting to attack, they had to leave many in the sea. Out of the total crew of 2,300 men, only 113 were saved. The Bismarck saga was over, but history will record that it had taken 8 battleships and battlecruisers, 2 aircraft carriers, 11 cruisers, and 21 destroyers to find and sink her. On the morning of the 27th of May, the Prime Minister Winston Churchill rose in the House of Commons and announced, "This morning, shortly after daylight, the Bismarck, virtually at a standstill, far from help, was attacked by pursuing British battleships. I do not know what the results were of the bombardment. It appears, however, that the Bismarck was not sunk by gunfire. She will be dispatched by torpedoes." Hardly had he sat down than another note was handed to him, and he rose again. "I ask for the indulgence of the House. I have just received news that the Bismarck is sunk. After the tragedy of the Hood, the members expressed their relief in an excited round of cheering and rejoicing. The following day, Churchill cabled President Roosevelt in Washington with this message: I will send you later the inside story of the fighting with Bismarck. She was a terrific ship and a masterpiece of construction. It was a worthy tribute to an extraordinary ship. It was the last time in the remaining years of World War II that a German battleship ever broke out into the vast Atlantic Ocean."